We are all motivated by meaning, which is why the Reinvent podcast aims to bring you a wide range of relevant information, focusing on all aspects of physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. The objective of this show is to pick the minds of some of the most interesting people, all with their own stories of personal transformation, so that you can make the changes towards a more meaningful, healthier, and happier life. My name is Nikki Robertson. I'm a clinical nutritionist, NLP practitioner, and founder of Reinvent Health. With almost 30 years in the corporate training industry, Brian Abbott is an internationally recognized corporate coach, specializing in the psychology of selling, business behavior, and interpersonal skills. Brian studied NLP with Dr. Richard Bandler and John Laval, the creators of neurolinguistic programming. In this episode, we chat about the one thing that most of us have forgotten all about, how to have fun, especially in the work environment. By bringing the fun back to our work and personal relationships, we can change the nature of how we live and the way we do business.
It's a very interesting space to be in.
Yeah.
Where for us, our entire business has shut down worldwide. So it really is quite creative. It's a fun time in regenerating ourselves, definitely.
Yeah, I think, you know, all that I can really think about is that up until now, we've all been saying we've got to do it differently. You know, it isn't working. Everybody's so stressed. But there was nothing prompting that. And suddenly, we've been prompted. It's almost like this mass, you know, manifestation of having to do life differently. Now we've got it. What are we going to do with it? And that's the big question.
Yeah, it's like Rupert Sheldrake, the 100 monkeys theory. You know about that one, right?
Tell us about that.
So it's quite interesting. Rupert Sheldrake is quite a prominent biologist from the UK. And he had this theory that, well, he talked about the experience in a Japanese island where these little monkeys used to steal sweet potatoes and then go and wash them in the sea. And after the 100th or the 1,000th monkey had washed the sweet potatoes, on the other side of the island, all the other monkeys over there suddenly started washing their sweet potatoes. So that energy kind of transcended to the other place. And I think he calls it morphogenetic resonance.
Yes, morphogenetic fields of intelligence, I think.
That's it.
There's no question about it. I think all of us have experienced these kinds of phenomena, but not really spoken about it because we don't have the language to talk about telepathy or intuition and the weird synchronicities that we experience so often. But it feels to me anyway that these things are hotting up and these experiences are becoming more intense, which can make you feel a little bit, you know, out of sorts. But I think it's the new normal. It's all, something's got to change because it wasn't working before.
No, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And from I've been doing quite a lot of interviews with CEOs, entrepreneurs, MDs saying, what's the new norm going to be? And a lot of the guys are saying they don't know. But what we're doing right now is we're taking stock of how we used to do things and having a really good look at it and saying we were stuck in a space that things were working, but they weren't working as well as what they can be working. And as we do a backward glance, we're looking and going, wow, if we hadn't had this experience today, we would never be able to move into a brighter, clearer, more creative future. So it's very interesting to hear what a lot of the guys are saying.
It is interesting. It's frightening, but it's, you know, it's the motivators of change. So what I'd like to do as we chat, and we've got all the time in the world here, which is also a fascinating concept, is I'd like to give the audience an understanding of your background. And I mean, you studied with Richard Bandler, which is, you know, that's just brilliant and amazing. And most of our audience don't know what NLP is. So I'm going to hand over to you to tell me or tell us how you got into coaching and how you started with the NLP.
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting journey. I came from a little thing we called low self-esteem as a kid. So I used to be the camel man, the guy going out, a strong boy, diving down to the depths of the ocean, jumping out of aeroplanes. And I just found that nothing really satisfied me on the inside. So I decided to do an internal journey. And it was really a tough one because to go inside and face yourself, warts and all, I believe takes quite a lot of courage. The beauty about that, Nikki, is that when I was on that journey, is that there were so many like-minded people who had the same experience on that same type of journey. So I got to this philosophy, you're never alone. There's always someone around who's on a similar type of journey, and a kind of collaboration takes place. And then I was really fortunate to go on a fire walk many years ago. It's nearly three decades ago. Yeah. And on that fire walk, the guy spoke about Tony Robbins, the guru out there. And I said, well, I want to go and study with him. He said, well, why don't you do Richard Bandler first? And I'd never heard of Richard Bandler. So I said, well, who is Richard Bandler? And he says, no, he's the father, the co-founder of NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming. So that really piqued my imagination. We didn't have a lot of social media and gear around like we have today. So it was, you couldn't exactly go on the internet and find out about that very easily. So I found out about it and I went on a course, and that was well over 20 years ago. And it was just mind-blowing, because what it did, it gave me a reflection into my own brain, how my brain works, Brian Abbott, how you do life, how you do stuff. And at the end of the 10-day course, I'll always remember Richard Bandler's words. He said, now go and NLP yourself before you NLP anybody else. So what NLP really is a way our brain works, is understanding exactly how the brain works. Anything that happens in our brain creates a certain state for us. Our state, whether it's happiness, sadness, doesn't matter what it is reflected in our physiology or our behavior and body language. So when you see someone walking down the street, just by their posture, we can tell pretty accurately what state of mind they're in. And that's been a journey of mine for absolute years and years and years. And in my business today, we go through and we help people suss out and figure out where they are, what's happening. And my passion is phobia cures. Is going and help people getting over phobias of heights and lifts and flying and insects. And that's a lot of fun to do.
Sure. So what I've learned, what's really stuck for me studying NLP and also years ago and using this in my practice today, is spotting how we train our brains to spot inconsistencies in communication. And, you know, when we're looking at the media nowadays with this pandemic and everything that's been reported, when you have been in the NLP world long enough and you are used to looking for a change to a baseline state, whether that is a person's baseline state or the baseline state of the communication going out there, it almost becomes, it's impossible not to miss this. It's impossible not to miss it. And I think so many people, whether they realize it or not, are picking up on the inconsistencies in the communication of what's going on in the media and what's going on in government. And this is triggering this sense of unease for us because we know something is out. What do you think about that concept?
I agree. I think there's such a lot of distortion that happens within the media, within the communication that's going, that it sends out mixed signals. And we respond so much to this little word called fear. And often what we do is we take a small chunk of information and we'll build our own movie around that. And that movie becomes real for us. And then we hear something from someone else, we get a little more distortion, or as in NLP speak, we get some generalization happening. And that starts to become a truth for us. And then the fears that are start to happen in, I think they just take everything, not everything, they take a lot of things and put it out of proportion. And we start to get stuck in patterns. And those patterns are fear. And they become real for a lot of people. I think we're very fortunate when we hang around with people in the similar kind of field where we can talk and we can explore things, where a lot of people are not aware of how language works. And I've always used this. Whatever you say to yourself, if you said it enough times, you'll become that. I am and will become that which I think about the most. And if we listen to how people speak language patterns, it's quite scary. And I do a fun little exercise with people. I say to them, have you ever said to yourself, I mustn't forget to do that? And yes. What do? You forget to do that because that's what you've told yourself. So I say, take your watch off, put it on the other arm. And what you'll do is, if you have to remember something a little later on, you'll go, why the hell is my watch on my other arm? And that'll trigger off that. So if we learn how to say to ourselves, I'll remember this instead of I'm going to forget about that, you start to train your brain. But these are tiny little things. I mean, you've met Jan, my wife, and Jenny and I, we coach each other all the time in our language, because I might say something, she'll say, babes, I just want you to be aware of what you said. And we don't get up tight with each other. We go, wow, thank you for reminding me of that. So it's about learning all the time about positive language speak. Positive, positive, positive. I know it sounds crazy, but it really is important.
But it's true. And NLP is often thought of as the basis of hypnosis, and there are roots of how hypnosis works in NLP, but it is the way we use our voices, and it's what we tell ourselves. We self-hypnotizing all the time. And if we're going to go and read, you know, certain news channels or feeds on social media, we're hypnotizing our consciousness into believing these things. And
oh, absolutely,
you know, this is where we start feeling terrible and fight with other people and pull ourselves into a state that's just not conducive to being well or happy.
And the problem is we often don't even know we're in the state. You have to have somebody else a lot of the time just to go, hey, by the way, can you see that you're really in a negative space? And then people get upset.
No, they do. No one likes to be called out. I think the most liberating thing in the world is not to care if you get called out and to use it constructively. I think that's freedom. So
we used to have in my old place when I stayed in Jersey, we used to have a big sign over there. As you walked in the front door, it said, no, no soapies. K-N-O-W, N-O soapies. Yes. I mean, don't bring your sub stories here, please. This is a place of joy. It's a place of happiness. It's a place where we laugh a lot, because we know laughter creates lots of endorphins, dopamine, serotonin. And you get hooked on that. And that's what we do most of the time. We still do such a lot of laughter over here. Because we insist on it, but it's a habit zone now that we play pranks on each other, silly little things, just to create that fun environment the whole time. And that in itself becomes a habit.
Yes, it does. And I think it's a choice. And it's probably the best way to live, considering. So the Happiness Institute I think it's in Sweden, recently released a report looking at the return on investment in workplace wellness programs, specifically focusing on happiness. And what they've figured out, or they've measured, is there's almost a 2-to-1 return on investment when a company focuses on keeping their staff happy. So, you know, you are a business coach, you've been in the business coaching industry for 30 years or more, almost over 30 years now, and your signature tune is fun. And yep. The last thing we associate with work is fun, yet we spend most of our lives in these institutions. And I really would like to just go into your brand of creating fun and happiness in a corporate institution or a corporate environment. How do you get that sort of as part of the nuts and bolts and foundation of a corporate atmosphere?
Cool question. And the first thing I have to do is take people out of their comfort zone. So what I've done over the last 3 decades or so, whenever I'm running a process with an organization, I have a little model. The P&I model is very simple. We have a baseline state in the middle. Above baseline is a time when we're happy or excited, motivated, if you want to use that word. And below that, I like to use the word depression, because I think you can have so much fun with depression, and I'm not knocking it because it does exist, but no child was born depressed to my knowledge in any case. And we also understand that by the age of 6, 40 to 50% of how we do life today has been programmed into our brains, our values, our attitude, our culture, our belief system, spiritual, social, political, by the age of 6 is programmed in there. Project Zero, I think it was Harvard that did it. They did a project and they took little kids and they measured them with a whole lot of measurements, spatial, mathematical, interpersonal, intrapersonal, you name it. It's massive. And they found out that about 98% of all the kids by the age of 4 came out at genius level. That's pretty impressive.
That's amazing.
They found by the age of 12 to 13, only 10% maintained the genius level. And by the age of 20, 2%. So my quest has been, it's quite amazing. My quest has been, where did that genius go? What happened to that person? And going back to that P&I model, where I, when I'm working with an organization and I've got 20 people in a room, I say, tell me where you are right now. And I have the ability to build quite cool rapport with people. And I think it comes from sincerity. And in my experience of the last 20 years or so, when I say to the folks, where are you? Are you on the line? Are you above the line? Are you below the line? So on the line is your baseline state, is the measurement of how much time you spend in excitement mode and in depression mode or sad mode. And my experience with the vast majority of people is that 65 to 75% of people in corporate organizations are unhappy. That's pretty scary stuff. That's ask the question as, what is it that makes you unhappy? And I break them up into groups and we explore it and we come out. And I start to find that the vast majority of people are out of sync with their values. They're not doing that which excites them. They're not doing that which they really want to do. And that creates pressure, creates tension. So you get up in the morning, you don't really want to go to work. When you do get there, and if you've got someone that you're reporting to that you don't get on well with, the level of communication is not exciting, it's not driven, you're under pressure, you have to produce. By the time you get home that evening, people are highly frustrated. If you've got kids, they run in and they take all your energy and you've got no energy left for them. It becomes a little wheel that we're on. It's like a spiral where we just get caught into that and caught into that. And after a short period of time, that becomes a habit. And that habit becomes deeply entrenched and it's difficult to break. So for me, when I hear the 1 hour rah-rah speakers and the guys go and say we can create change in an hour, I don't believe it, because as Virginia Satir says, we have a familiar status quo, that part of life where we get stuck in the patterns and the habits, and some of them are really, really good. There's no doubt about it. We survived in them, but it takes an unprecedented experience, something like an unfamiliar thing like this COVID-19 to come in and rattle our cages. And that throws us into a void of chaos, which the world is in today. And a lot of people don't know how to deal with it. And it's scary because we don't know what the future holds at this point in time. We don't know if there's going to be a second outbreak. And business has gone crazy because most of the stuff in the world has been put on hold. And we go, how do we deal with this? So there's a huge amount of fear. And one of the ways I believe we can get over it is to have some fun, to not take ourselves so damn seriously.
Absolutely.
To lighten up a little bit. And just when you walk around, I'm one of those crazy guys, you know me, I hide in the cupboard, the kid walks past, I jump out and I give them a hell of a fright and we have some laughter and we lighten things up.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I mean, I have to admit, the first 10 days of this lockdown, I spent most of my time binge watching comedy, because what's the point of sitting around feeling miserable? Because we can't control the situation and it's not going to help. And we know that the one thing that impacts our immune system more than anything is fear and trauma. So what is it that you would recommend, you know, people do to start reframing the way they look at the world? But, you know, also people who are now being forced into working differently, and the stress levels we're seeing from the average person who's having to do 10 Zoom meetings a day is possibly on par with how we were 3 months ago, with the levels of stress of having to go have one-on-one meetings and get into traffic. So we've just swapped one level of stress for another in a different context, but the way we're viewing the world hasn't changed, and that's probably why.
I agree with you. You know, I've had to get into the new technology of Zoom as well and Microsoft Teams, simply because if we don't, then our business becomes absolutely obsolete. And it's probably going to change the way we run our programs in any case. From an NLP perspective, it's really difficult to do NLP online. You can, certain parts of it, but in terms of NLP training, you really need to be there with people to read the fine little nuances and all those tiny little things. But yeah, I agree. And I'm starting to find that people spend a good 2 hours extra in business today. And what I mean by that is, you've been in the corporate world, I believe 2 to 3 hours a day of everyone's life is spent in meetings. And now you don't have those meetings, so yeah. You have to be more productive at home. We put much more effort into it. It's much busier. It's much more intense. And the stress can build up just as big. As well as you're on Zoom, we don't see each other right now, so I'm trying to make pictures the whole time in my head. And I don't know if you've noticed when you're on Zoom, eye contact is not exactly the same. So we're having to learn now to look at the camera and then glance down at the person's face. And so it becomes stressful in itself because we're not able to read those little eye movements like we normally would. My recommendation, and this is one of the things that we're doing for ourselves, we get up, we do whatever we do. Luckily here, we can go out and do some exercise, so we take a walk, and we take regular breaks. We close your office door, walk into your home, and leave it for a while, because it's so easy just to pop in and say, oh, I just need to send one more email, and the next minute, you're in there for an hour. And in that hour, it's crazy.
Yes.
So our recommendation is, lighten up a little bit, have some fun. There's nothing that we can do about that except in your industry. Stay healthy, stay alert, stay alive. Find out what your purpose is. What is it that you really want to do? And a lot of people I've been speaking to are saying, this is really good for me because it's given me some time just to sit and do an inner reflection of who I am, what I am, where I want to go, what I want to be. Am I on the right track? Are we going to survive? Sure, we're human beings. We're strong. We will survive this, but it's to have the positive attitude and a positive mindset and just to believe, to say, you will really, really get through this. And my key thing, and that's what I do with organizations, Nikki, I go and I say, how can you have more fun? One of my key fundamental things I do before I finish there, I say, how can you as a team here have more fun in what you're doing with exactly the same resources that you've got right now, exactly the same people? And all we do is we unpack some crazy stuff. How are you going to have a fun Friday? You don't have to open up a pub and go crazy. You can have fun in so many different ways. And the minute you start, and fun for me stands for full-time involvement in what you're doing, unlimited enthusiasm, and do it now as an acronym. And the minute we start doing that, we start exploring much more joy in our lives. And you know about this as well as anybody else does. The minute that we're joyous, we have dopamine in our system, serotonin, endorphins. We lighten up. Life becomes easier.
You know, I completely resonate with everything you're saying. And what saddens me is I look around and I see so many people who are just sitting there in their tiny little bubbles of misery. And it's really difficult to say to a person, this is self-created. You made the bubble. You're the one who can pop it. And nobody really wants to hear this because it's so blame everybody else and the environment and the economy. But the truth is, the reality sits in your brain. It's not out there. And how do we Yeah.
No, you're quite right. I find it so many times when I'm in a little bit of a defensive mode, which I get into every now and again, Jan says to me, Brian, you know what? You need to go on one of your own courses on attitude. And it's not something you want to hear. I kind of give her the look and then I go, you know what? You're damn right. So often when someone points something out, we get defensive. And my buzz is, if I get defensive, then maybe there's something inside that's pushing a button that I need to be able to have a look at. And you're right, it's about choices. I believe life fully is about choice. I can choose to be happy. I can choose to be sad. I can choose to make a decision. I can choose to do nothing about it. Even the most difficult times in our life, we still have a choice.
Yes, and you know, we see this all the time. We see people in impoverished countries, India, Africa, who live with nothing, but they find something to be joyous about. By contrast, we've got people we all know living in first world countries with all the resources in the world, and they find a lot to be miserable about. And again, it comes down to a choice. You know, how do we get that mind shift? And I think the situation we're sitting in is forcing us to introspect. There's been way too much distraction up until now. In fact, the distraction curve since the 80s has escalated to a point where the brain can't keep up. And this is causing probably more stress than anything else. We just have been so good at creating distraction from the realities of life. Now we're forced to introspect, and it is resulting in suicide in some people. Yep. And, you know, it's terrifying what's going on, but it's a choice irrespective of our circumstances. It's really interesting. And I think in your position, you sitting with a tool that is so valuable. What comes to mind is, you know, you work with so many corporates, and I think it is a corporate social responsibility to get this out there, even to people who are not part of these organizations, is the tools, coping tools, attitude tools, you know. I think it's so fundamental, it's so important.
And do you know what I'm finding, Nikki? I'm finding with some of your more charismatic, conscious leaders, for want of a better word, that a big thing coming out now is to say we need to have some empathy. And it's so wonderful to hear. I was on a Zoom call yesterday with a client who runs a call center, small but a very unique boutique, and he's got 200 people. And he said, most of the guys now are working from home, and we've got to have empathy, Brian. We've got to understand that their situation is way different to a lot of us. They're not as privileged as what we are in where they live and how they live with, and I didn't even think about this, but just with access to electronics.
Sure.
Just to be able to get a good data line so that they can make the calls. And he said, it's quite fascinating that what he does now, he doesn't even look at CVs. The first thing you do is you send a WhatsApp voice message. And based on that, they will say, this is the right person. That's not the right person. That's not the right person. But it's to be able to have empathy. And the difference between empathy and sympathy is a fine dividing line. Yes. But to be able to care, to send out that caring so that people know, you know what, you're important to us. Thank you for what you're doing for us. We value you. And he said that little bit goes such a long as it's from the heart and it's not insincere, because people can pick up insincerity in a heartbeat.
Instantly. Yeah. You know, what you put out, you get back in spades. So there's no room for insincerity, and people are wise to this. And even if it is via a webcam, our brains are learning to read these subtle cues, even with a delayed signal. It's amazing what you can learn to do. One of the tricks I learned speaking to camera, which is something that took me a very long time to be comfortable with, and this is such a good tip for anybody who's battling with Zoom, is to draw a little smiley face and take a paper punch out the hole and stick the hole over the camera. And then every time you stare at the camera, something's smiling back at you. And it creates an element of fun. And you start laughing at the ridiculousness of your, you know, our fears of talking into camera, of being, you know, on the pedestal in a meeting. And that's just one funny little trick that gets you to relax and stop taking yourself so damn seriously.
I think that's fantastic. I think that's an absolutely awesome idea. I'm going to do that myself. Thank you.
It works like a shot. And you're staring at this stupid thing you've drawn, staring back at you, grinning. And, well, it takes the edge off everything. And that just, you know, reminds me of, you know, we all take ourselves too seriously, especially in corporate. Let's go back and talk about fun again, because if you had to go to, say, a bank or a big institution or a government institution, and you've got these people who are very nervous of not towing the line or not saying the right thing and not being politically correct, how do you break the ice and tell them, you know what, guys, stop taking yourself so seriously. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to have fun in your organization. What is the response you get?
So the first thing I do is I go through a communication model, how your map works, what happens over here, just so that we're moving out of business and we're moving into our own personal space. How does our brain work from a very simplistic point of view? Anything that happens in our map, we know our brain has approximately 100 billion brain cells. One is capable of 250,000 interconnections. I think there's some more updated information on that. But that's just a little bit of how powerful this stuff is. And we get people relaxed. That's what I want to do. I want to get them relaxed, and I want to move from a presentation into a conversation. And the minute you have conversation, you have rapport. When people feel that they're not going to get judged, they open up fairly easily. And then I get them to talk about themselves. So who are you? What do you, where you come from? What's happened? And I've got a little process that I use that gets people really comfortable. And what I do with every single one, I create some humor. And when we have humor, and Richard Bandler taught me this 20 plus years ago, if we have a little laugh and a little giggle, even if it's a false giggle, the brain doesn't know the difference. And so it produces specific chemistry. So when we're doing a process with somebody who's gone through a trauma stuff and we get them to do a little giggle, it breaks state and it lightens them up.
It remaps the chemicals in the brain associated with that trauma anyway.
Absolutely. And once we can break that state and we can get people out of this tenseness of I'm in this business environment, I'm under the whip over here. And I used to years ago, and I'll backtrack. I used to years ago break up all my programs into outdoor stuff as well. So we would do 2-3 hours indoor, 2-3 hours outside, either to be on the river, in the mountains, doesn't matter where it was. So it would bring a total different flair or flavor into this. And the beauty about that is when you're doing that, you have such a lovely comparison of what's happening in the business, in my life, and what's happening outside. You get someone to sleep outside today under the stars. Most people don't sleep because we don't know how to do that anymore. As a kid, I grew up sleeping outside. So it takes us way out of our comfort zone. So I want people to feel comfortable. And once they feel comfortable, their creative juices start flowing.
If now we're in a situation where we can't carry on business as usual, as you said, what are your plans for taking these strategies into new organizations or businesses that you're currently working with? How's it going to work going forward?
What I'm starting to find is on these webinars, as we call them today, is you can build pretty much similar rapport. It's just getting used to a different medium, a different flavor. And people initially are a little tense and then they start to lighten up. And I just find if I'm just myself, I don't try to be anybody else. And I say, listen, I don't know how to use this stuff as effectively as I could. It's going to happen. I'm going to switch that off. I'm going to do this. People start to relax. And I think if we make ourselves a little vulnerable, in other words, talking from the heart, this is me, this is Brian Abbott, this is what's happened to me, this is who I am, you start getting a couple of nods. And from that, and I've always read body language, from that you can start lightening up and going, oh, okay, cool. And the breakaway rooms can be so cool if you've got some valuable stuff. So tell us a little bit about this. Let's talk about you, but not going into too much depth about you because it's still uncomfortable at this point in time. Once that rapport has been built and people feel comfortable, it starts to flow and it starts to roll.
Amazing.
And I'm certainly starting to feel that it's about how I run it initially. And once it starts to roll and people know that they're comfortable, that they're safe, that no one's going to get ridiculed, broken, knocked, nailed, then creativity starts to flow.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that what I'm hearing you say is the ability of the coach to be adaptable and to still, you know, make a plan one way or another, we can adapt to the situation. So what I would like to do, how can people get hold of you and how can they contact you if they're interested in finding a way of rebuilding what's left of their businesses or finding a new way to do business anywhere in the world?
Yes, sure. So my website will be up, should be up next week. Let's make it the week after because we're just re-busy doing it right now. Mm-hmm. And that will be under www.brianabbotttraining3tsinit.com. And then, of course, LinkedIn is a great place. And I love speaking one-on-one in any case, just catching up and finding out where people are and having a conversation. Just talking about it.
Sure. So in the show notes, I'll put all your LinkedIn links and your website address and all of that as well. Let's keep the conversation going. And I hope that this is going to get anybody who's on the fence about finding a way through this situation motivated to just pull the plug and let's get going and let's just carry on living in a
new way. You know, one of the things I look at, Nikki, and look at my own life and Jenny and I do this all the time. We say, how can we get up every single day and laugh a little bit more than what we did before? And I know it sounds crazy. And so we choose not to watch. I haven't watched the news in I don't know how long. And I don't really have to, I believe, because if something's serious enough, I'll get to know about it. But if I look at it every single day, we know we assimilate graphic information 60,000 times quicker than printed copy. So I see all these visuals happening. I see all the masks and all the stuff. It has a massive effect on us. So I choose not to see that. What I choose to do is to rather engage in some laughter. I watch some fun programs. I'm not unaware of what's happening. However, I'm not going to focus on it because I fully believe what you focus on the most is what you're going to get in life. So if you're focusing on negativity, misery, anger, hatred, that's what you're going to attract into your life. If you're focusing on where am I going? How am I going to get there? I'll give an example of speaking to a client of mine in the States, and I just loved it. I said, what have you noticed that's different working from home now, Philip? And he said to me, it's okay today if the dog barks. And I thought, you know, you're so right. A couple of months ago, if you're on a webinar and the dog's barking, you come out, you go crazy. Today, your customer says, so what dog have you got?
Yeah, but it makes us human, you know.
Absolutely. It's being able to sit and relax and have a conversation and just lighten up and be human. You're so right.
Yeah, and if the kids pop in on the Zoom meeting, who cares anymore? I mean, this is just who we are. I think that's great advice. And I completely agree with not listening to the news. I haven't watched the news in years, and it's the best thing I ever did. Was you'll pick up the headline somewhere. Somebody's going to tell you if it's important enough. But you don't have to in that situation unless you want to. And I can't imagine.
Yeah, some people get hooked into it. That's just not for me. I'd rather look and say, what can we do today that's more creative, more fun? Why not go for a little walk? I know we can do that. Luckily, let's take the hound. Let's go for a little stroll. Let's just break state and then come back in with a refreshed mind. Because I think if you spend too much time in doing exactly what you're doing, you become tired. Your brain becomes tired. You need that little break to come back and just have an endorphin rush, have a little giggle every now and again, have a little laugh, lighten up. Don't take life so seriously.
Sure, laughs.
I love that saying. I don't know when I'm going to check out of this planet.
Yeah. So just to round up our conversation, and it's a question that I still haven't had a satisfying answer to, so I'm not going to put you on the spot here, is when did we learn to stop having fun? Because if you look at children, you know, we know how to enjoy life. We know how to live in our imaginations. When does that stop and why?
You know, I go back to Project Zero, and I've asked the question, how come at the age of 4, we've got this genius and then it goes away? And I think it's got to do with a lot of the programming that we have as little kids. Mm. As we go into school, you're taught you've got to do this, you've got to perform over here, you've got to do that, you have to do this. And from an NLP perspective, I only found out how my brain worked in my early 30s. And I thought, I wish I had known this as a little kid, because I'm a very visual and auditory person. And I was taught to think in a digital manner, study this. And if you don't get 40, 50, 80%, then you're labeled as stupid. And those labels become our reality.
Sure, they do. And then there's also that theory that, well, it's not even theory, it's a fact that our frontal cortex really only comes into full development at the age of around 25. And
that's right.
Our risk-taking behavior is that much more heightened up until about that age. And that seems to be the age that we completely forget that there's joy in life. But again, it's a choice. It's just knowing this and going, well, I'm going to just choose to live a bit differently.
That's exactly it. Why be normal? Be a little different. Be a little crazy. That's one of the things I love saying. Being a little crazy, man. It doesn't mean you have to go and hurt people or offend people, but be a little crazy. Be a bit off the wall. Yes. What can go wrong? You can explore more about yourself. You might find out something about yourself that you never knew before.
It's more real, isn't it? And I think that's what we're all naturally attracted to, is real people, even if people who are sincere.
I agree.
Okay.
Absolutely agree.
Great. So thank you so much for your time. We're going to put this out there as usual, and hopefully it's going to light an inspiration under some people's butts not to take themselves too seriously, and hopefully get in contact with you and find out how we can make a difference and change our perspectives and use this situation as an opportunity to live better.
And change the world. Get people laughing a lot.
Yes, nothing wrong with laughing a lot. I think it's the best medicine.